In October of 2001, a medical student named Jason Rasmussen traveled from the Twin Cities to hike the Powwow Trail, located in northeastern Minnesota's Lake County. The Powwow Trail wanders through a remote section of the Boundary Waters, and experienced hikers know it can be difficult to navigate. On Jason's first day out, the weather was clear and mild, and he felt exhilarated to be hiking in the woods by himself. But by the end of the second day, he knew something was wrong. He had lost the trail he was supposed to be on. He didn't panic. He set up camp that night and determined to get back on the main trail the next day. That morning, he opened his tent to find dropping temperatures and a cold drizzle. With the change in weather, he decided to leave his tent and gear behind, regain the main trail, and return to his car that was parked at the trailhead. But after wandering for many hours and not finding any trail, he realized something worse had happened. He was now lost without a tent or equipment. It was nearly dark, and the temperature had dropped below freezing. He knew he was going to have to spend the night in the woods without shelter. It was fortunate that before leaving the Twin Cities, Jason had instructed his mother to call the Lake County Sheriff if she did not hear from him by the fourth day of his hike. After receiving no word, Jason's mother called the sheriff's office, and a formal search was begun. B.J. Kolstad is now the director of Lake County Emergency Management and was part of the search and rescue team. Joining the search effort on the third day, B.J. recalls first hearing about the missing hiker.
Jason left for this hike on a Monday, and he hoped to be home on a Thursday. On Wednesday, northern Minnesota was hit with an unexpected and very severe blizzard. There were 50-mile-an-hour winds. They got 10 inches of snow in October, and so this was completely unexpected. Initially, my impression when they told us we were looking for a 29-year-old, physically fit, experienced hiker who was out solo, my initial thought was, well, if I was out in the Boundary Waters and got 10 inches of snow as a surprise in October, I would have just stayed put. So my first thought was that maybe he's just holding up and he'll come out by himself, just give him some time. But I also knew that being the third day of a search, if they haven't found him yet or he hasn't been able to walk out yet, it's a more critical situation because of the weather.
My name is Peter Smerud of the Lake County Search and Rescue. When I arrived, and there was part of me that wasn't surprised, in the fall, it is not unusual that we would get paged to a lost hunter or a hiker. And yet it was at a time of year that's very challenging, especially for a hiker that may have been out there, and how well are they prepared? 3 days into it, typically we have found the person within that time frame. It's rare that we have something lasting more than a full day. And so my first thoughts were, wow, this is going to be tough, because if they haven't found him by now, that means all the easy areas have been looked at, and it's going to get tougher in a hurry. And now, given the forecast was for cold, very cold weather and snow, of course there's that piece of, oh, I hope they're okay, and I hope it's not a body recovery that we're going after, that we're actually going out to rescue someone. The Powwow Trail is a remnant of a much larger trail system, and that Powwow Trail had been maintained for years as a wonderful backpacking loop, yet challenging to navigate. It was well known for that. And by plane, by foot, by wheeler, all these folks working for days prior to my arrival had really crossed all that off the map. When I arrived, BJ was out in canoes, and they were paddling out across the lake. And as they paddled in, the ice was literally freezing right behind them and or breaking ice to get back to shore. And that eliminates suddenly an avenue of quick travel. Oh, how are we going to get people out there? It's cold and freezing, but it's not frozen enough to have the swamps frozen yet. And so now if you're wading through waist-deep muck, that was the type of conditions that we were struggling with.
So we bring in canines who are trained to do area searches for missing people, either specific people, like you've seen the movies where they smell the sock, and they go through crowds of people until they find the person who was wearing that sock. And dogs really do that. It's fantastic to watch. There are also dogs who are trained to find any person in a 40-acre plot. And then, of course, there are the cadaver dogs. When we're alive, we all smell differently to a dog. But when we die, we all smell the same. We smell like a dead person. So there are dogs who are specifically trained to smell for dead bodies. And they can do that on land. They can also do it underwater. So if Jason had gone into a lake, for example, we can put dogs in boats and grid the lake. And then they will alert or mark a spot where they believe there's a body under the water.
Searching by air and ground had yielded no trace of Jason, either on or off the powwow trail. But on the morning of October 30th, the fifth day of the search, pilots spotted an orange tent far off the main trail.
The airplane finally found the tent, a tent at least. They found an orange tent, and they called in and they said, "We found a tent. These are the coordinates." And the coordinates they gave us were surprising because they were far, far from the beginning of the trail, far from the trail itself. And the other thing that was a little bit despairing about that note when they found it, they said, you know, there's no way to get here. You can't get here. It's in the middle of nowhere.
I remember the pilot saying that, and we got radio calls back from conservation officers and rescue workers and people who hunt and fish in this country, and just give me the coordinates. We will get there. Arguably out in the middle of the boundary waters, it feels, and that we've got an orange marker, and here we go. And it became, all right, who's closest? And the focus was on, and that crew took off. They hiked and slogged through swamp and bog, and they get to the tent, and I was sitting in there listening to the radio as they arrived, and you hear this huffing, puffing voice, and they said, "We can see the tent. It's snow covered on the ground. There are no tracks. Do I have permission to enter the scene?" We talk amongst ourselves in incident command. "Yes, document what you see. Preserve the scene as best you can. Walk in one path." And they walked into the scene. They're at the tent. There's no sound. There's no tracks. There's no noise. "Do we have permission to open the tent?" "Yes, you have permission to open the tent." And you hear on the radio, zip, and nothing. There's a pause. And they said, "He is not in the tent. There's nobody here. Jason is not here." And of course, everyone at this point, we found the tent. There's no tracks. There hasn't been tracks for days. No one said it. No one had to say it. We all assumed he was in the tent and likely had died. And yet now, to open the tent, what do you mean he's not there? We were sort of baffled. And yet now really intrigued if he's not there. So it became a documentation. What is in the tent? What gear is in there? They went through item by item in the tent, trying to preserve everything with scent for the dogs and with documentation of the scene. And that one of the things that they find is that there is a survival book open, and it's open to the page reading up on hypothermia. And everyone, oh, that's not the best sign. But the fact that he was there, and that was an inspiration that added this whole new energy. And now, the point last seen, although not seen, we felt confident. Now we are working in a radius out from this site.
You've been listening to part one of The Missing Hiker, an account by Peter Smirud and B.J. Kolstad of their participation in the Boundary Waters search for Jason Rasmussen. It had been 8 days since Twin Cities medical student Jason Rasmussen had become lost in the woods while hiking a remote trail in northeast Minnesota's Lake County. An extensive ground and air search of his route, the Powwow Trail, had yielded no clues until an airplane spotted his orange tent far off the main trail. A ground crew set out to check the tent and discovered no sign of Jason or any recent tracks in the snow that had fallen several days earlier. With very cold temperatures, high winds, and 10 inches of snow, the search team worried that with no shelter, Jason might not still be alive. Peter Smerud and B.J. Kolstad were part of the Lake County search and rescue team and recall their part of the effort to find the missing hiker.
The snow around the tent hasn't been disturbed since last Wednesday. It's been 7 days that he's been out of that tent. All of his outer clothing was in the tent, his sleeping bag was in the tent, his food was in the tent. He didn't have much with him. And the chance of finding Jason alive at this point, after 7 days, knowing he'd been out of his tent, they're very slim. So one of the things we did was we sent dogs to the tent to find out if they could pick up his smell from a week ago and figure out a direction of travel or where he had headed. One of the dogs went to a nearby pond. It was very close to the tent. And the dog went and what we call hit or alerted on that pond. And of course, in our minds, and we're thinking Jason left the tent to go get some water in the pond and slipped into there and is in the pond. The next day, we made plans to keep looking for Jason and to hopefully bring him back to his family, but we had two different plans, one for a cadaver or a dead body and one for a live patient.
We are now searching, and we've got crews who are addressing the radius from this tent. We really had several different caches of equipment that we needed to assemble out into the wilderness, and one was for a body recovery of a cadaver, which is arguably much easier than anything else that we would do. But given the alert the dog had on the water, are we doing a water search? And so we had dive equipment, or we had ropes for high angle rescue or moving out there. We had body bags and litters to be able to sled somebody through the snow. And of course, it was also then staging medical equipment.
So these crews are working their way toward the tent. So they were making a lot of noise with chainsaws, and dogs were barking, and ATVs were rolling along, and you know, we'd bring whistles and we signal in case anyone can yell back or something. So at one point, one of our crews up there heard a whistle, and he turned to his partner, he told me later, and he said, did you hear that? I thought I heard a whistle. And she said, I didn't hear a whistle. And he says, well, listen. And they heard it again. They heard another whistle. So they got on their radios and they were talking to the other teams and they said, are you signaling? Did you hear a whistle? Because we heard a whistle. No, we're not signaling. Nobody was signaling. So they said, everyone be quiet. And they listened again and they heard a whistle again. So of course you can imagine everybody, including the dogs, went off running toward this whistle. And 10 minutes later, they found Jason, who had been whistling. He had a whistle with him. The dog ran up to Jason and poked at him, which is what these dogs are trained to do, touch the person, and then run back to their handler to bring the handler back to the person. So, of course, Jason told me later, imagine my despair when the dog came up and nudged me and then ran away. I thought that he was leaving me. And so within 10 minutes, the crew was with Jason. Jason was alive and well and in wonderful spirits. I shouldn't say he was well. He wasn't perfectly well, of course. He had frozen toes. He had lost, I think, 15 pounds. His body temperature was 91 degrees. He should have not been well. He was one tough character.
In talking with the crew that found him, Jason had holed up in a large downed white pine that was rotten and had crawled inside and created a bed in there and created this fabulous shelter that kept him alive. After all these days being out there all by himself, he'd waved at the plane had flown over, the plane never saw him due to the clothing he was wearing. He'd hear sounds and he guessed that they were searching for him, but the despair and nobody ever came. He went through all those processes. I'm going to die out here. And then the dog comes and he runs and leaves. And yet then 10 minutes later, a human being appeared across this small clearing. And he didn't really think it was real at first. And I talked to the rescuer and the rescuer thought it was another rescuer. Because nobody really thought Jason was going to be alive after all these days and all this cold and 10 inches of snow and below zero and rain. That he's not going to be standing there waving at me. And they looked at each other from across the clearing and sort of raised their hands and waved and walked to him. And the person asked, are you Jason? I am. We're looking for you. And there was a hug and there was the drama. And here he was standing talking to them as people gathered and started to cover him up with an emergency blanket and to give him water and snacks. And they wanted to sit him down, and they were all worried about him. And let me take care of you. Let me do this. He said, I'm fine. I can walk. And given all he'd been through, he was in remarkable shape. I did a medical exam, and the really only, besides weight loss, dehydration, hypothermia, all things you can recover from, as I pulled off his boots, that his feet were white and blue, and that this sort of light iridescent blue, and they were a lacking feeling, and he had frostbite rather significantly across the bottoms of his feet, up into his toes, and yet that was really the only trauma his body physically had suffered in a direct way, other than cold, tired, hungry, and dehydrated.
Getting Jason home was the next challenge, getting him back to the parking lot at Isabella Lake. It took about 3.5 hours to get a team out there with a pod to rescue him and bring him back, and the trails were difficult, wet, frozen, going across beaver dams and through beaver ponds, and it was just a long haul to get him back. So he finally got back after 5 o'clock at night, and of course it's dark out, and the pod with Jason drove up to the parking lot. We had an ambulance waiting there for him. He was sitting up and smiling and waving, and he was so happy and so gracious. We were all just stunned at the character of this young man after all he had gone through. There were several law enforcement officers involved in this, and one of the deputies on the scene was Joe Linneman out of Ely, and he happens to be a bagpiper. And so when Jason was coming in, I said to Joe, do you have your bagpipes in your truck? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, pipe him in. This is the way we bring in honored guests in the Voyageur tradition and Voyageur history in northern Minnesota and the Boundary Waters, is they would pipe in honored guests. So Joe brought out his bagpipes, and as Jason was pulling up with in the pod, pulled by the four-wheeler, Joe was marching up and down the parking lot, bagpiping this guy in, which was just really emotional and humorous in a way, because I don't know that Jason knows the tradition or realized why this person was standing out in the parking lot in the cold and the dark playing his bagpipes, but it meant a lot to us. We asked him how he did it, how he could survive that long, for example, and he said the reason that he survived until that last Friday was had found some birch bark, and he had a pen. One of the few things he had with him was a pen, and he was writing a note to his family because he didn't think that he would be found alive. And so he says, well, I hadn't finished my last note yet. So it was just a great, wonderful story about the character of this young man and how he survived this. And also, I think, the character and determination of our rescue volunteers. I still have a picture of Jason on my wall at home. I'm sure a lot of us do, because it was just a story that makes a lot of the work that we do on Rescue Squad worthwhile.
The missing hiker, Jason Rasmussen, did eventually lose portions of all his toes due to frostbite. He also spent a long convalescence at his parents' house, but otherwise did recover without any long-term problems. He now works as a physician in the Twin Cities area. Thanks to Peter Smerud and B.J. Colstead, members of the Lake County Search and Rescue Team, for their contributions to this feature.